Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Are you serious?
So this is How to Kill an Hour. There's plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you in advance for killing some time with us. My name is Marcus Bronzy, and on today's show, I'm joined by the comedian, TV host, amazing TV show maker, which we'll get onto as well, Ramesh Ranganathan. How you doing, man? You're right, brother.
How you doing, man? You're right. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Now, first things first, we are currently still in some sort of lockdown. Ramesh, how have you been killing time in lockdown, man?
Well, I've been playing a lot of Fortnite, is the truth.
Yeah?
Well, basically, my kids, we've got three boys, and we've been doing homeschooling with them, and that turned to shit very quickly. So, because like everybody with kids, we had all of these aspirations of like doing some proper shit with them, and you know, doing a full day's education. I used to be a teacher. My wife is, occasionally still teaches, but she used to be a full time teacher. So we had all of these ideas of what we were going to do, and then it became really difficult because the kids are starting to get stressed out and stuff, and they've been playing Fortnite non-stop. And I don't know morally how I feel about our kids playing Fortnite, because essentially, for those of you that don't know, it's a game where you get dropped onto an island and you have to kill everybody else on that island. That's essentially the aim of the game. And our youngest son is 5, right? And and like the other day, I heard him saying, oh, I've got an AR. And I said to my wife, should our son be talking about assault rifles? Should a 5-year-old kid be talking about assault rifles? I think that's up for debate, you know. And you think about the differences, the disparity between what we think is acceptable for them to watch in film and on TV, as opposed to what we allow them to experience on video games. It's incredible to me. It's like my wife was not sure about letting our kids watch Friends because they talk about sex and stuff, and I was like,
yeah.
They killed like. Between them killed 35 people this morning. I think them watching Monica talk about how she wants to shag Chandler is probably going to be all right. You know?
You just made me think, Ramesh. You made me think that the whole going into quarantine and coming out with a new skill set, your kids have taken that to a whole new level, bro.
Mate, if this is the apocalypse, I have got 3 of the best trained soldiers in the country willing to defend this house by all means. But the truth is, I was trying to like figure out a way of engaging with them, because obviously they're so obsessed with Fortnite. And but the thing is that they actually, the thing about it is they want to talk about Fortnite all the time. And so I just thought, I'm just going to join these kids, because, you know, you could either take the approach of going, I'm sick of you talking about Fortnite, can you stop going on about Fortnite? And so we went the other way, and I've joined. I've started playing Fortnite. And I sort of play it either from my phone or from my laptop, and it's mad, man. It's like they've started, they look after me in these squad battles. Do you know what I mean? It's like they'll go, Dad, I've got a weapon for you. Dad, I've got a med kit for you. Come over here, Dad. You've not got a lot of health points. Come over here. Let me hook you up. You know, all this stuff. And it's like, basically, in the outside world, I look after them. I say I look after them, Mark, because me and my wife does mostly. She bears the brunt of it. And in Fortnite, they're looking after me. I mean, it's a nice way of connecting with your kids through a hideously violent video game.
Do you think Fortnite gets away with it because it's kind of cartoony looking? Like it's not like COD looks real, doesn't it? COD is, it feels very like a simulation, but Fortnite's like a bit like, you know, it's a cartoon, isn't it?
Well, really? if they were playing COD, I would be much more worried, I think. Excuse me. If they're playing COD, I'd be much more worried. And the reason is because, like you said, that is a war simulation. Do you know what I mean? Like that is so immersive. Whereas I look at my son and he's killed somebody, but on the other side of that, he is a banana. So you can sort of appreciate.
That wasn't a racial slur, guys. That wasn't a racial slur. I just want to say. Ramesh, freaking up. 5 minutes in, bruv. Right to the edge.
So you sort of go, and also there's no blood in it, really. Do you know what I mean? And even when you die, like the way that you die is like a light shines on you, and you get sort of called up to Fortnite heaven. It's not quite.
Yeah,
it's not like your head comes off or anything like that. So I've kind of made my peace with it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how your teacher skills were faring at home with the homeschooling, but I think you kind of answered that as well, haven't you?
Well, you know, I used to be a maths teacher. And the thing is that these kids, they're taught in a different way to how I was even teaching it. So when they ask me to show them how to do something, it's really weird. They make me feel old because they go, "That's not the way the kids are doing it, man. Like you're doing it in some old fart way." Do you know what I mean? Like that's not the way I was showing how to do it. So just like, so I'm having the experience of not being able to teach them, but also them losing respect for me professionally. As a former teacher, you know what I mean? So homeschooling has been treacherous. But I think it's been treacherous for everyone, do you know what I mean? I actually think all parents, and I've been saying this a lot, parents, just give yourselves a break, man. We've been given a tough ask here, which is delivering an educational experience to our children on top of the inherent fear and anxiety that comes with a global pandemic. So you know what? Cut yourself some slack.
There was a reason why people had this specific job before you were in lockdown anyway. That's the whole point of school, right?
Correct.
And also, all parents out there, stop fucking pretending that you are homeschooling the next Einstein because you are the one teaching your child. So many people are like, today we learned quantum physics. Yeah. No, you didn't. YouTube video explainer is not learning quantum physics.
Listen, I've seen your Facebook post. You don't have the skills, all right? You haven't got it in your locker to deliver high-level education, all right? So stop fucking pretending.
Yeah, man, I hear that. So how about yourself when you're getting some downtime? How are you killing? I mean, you said Fortnite on a phone, actually. I want to go back to that because it's quite challenging playing it on a phone. I've tried it, and it's not like on a console. You get rinsed.
Well, this is what happened, right? Is that so I bought a Nintendo Switch, okay?
Yeah.
And I love that piece of kit. I think it's unbelievable in terms of, like, I think for me, as like, you know, I would describe myself as a casual gamer. Like I like playing a lot, but I'm not one of these hardcore guys that goes in deep for 48 hours and all that shit. I just sort of dip in and out, right? So the Switch is great because it's got those kind of games that you can get really into. Like Zelda's pretty immersive and you can probably get into that. But then it's also got Mario Kart and shit like that you can just dip in and out of. Anyway, I bought a Switch for myself, but used the usual thing of telling my wife that I was getting it for the family because I'd read, you know, because I'd saw these like Switch family games and shit. And and anyway, what happened was that got commandeered by my children. So then what happened? So they started playing it nonstop. I wasn't even seeing the Switch, right? And the other thing is the lack of respect these kids have for expensive kit is absolutely disgusting. It's absolutely insane. I bought a case for it. This thing, the case is bulletproof. And yet they have scratched that piece, that Switch to shit. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. You know what? If I'd have showed you that Switch and said, "Oh, this comes from they salvaged this from a war zone," you'd go, "Yeah, it bears all the wear and tear marks of something that must have been, you know, it must have been in some sort of Middle Eastern country that was dealing with some heavy conflict." That's what that looks like. So I was furious, right? I was furious, but I was like, "Do you know what? Have that Switch, okay? Because do you know what? I've got another series of this show. I can afford to splash out and get myself another Switch. I'll get myself another Switch, right? The kids are with me when I buy the Switch, and I've given them all this lecturing about, listen, you're not touching this, okay? This is my Switch now, right? Recognize, okay? You've got that Switch, and you've ruined it. And that's yours now. You've made your bed, okay? Now you can lie in it." And then my son, he said to me, "We took the first Switch, He's 8 years old, this kid. Imagine an 8 year old looking in the eye and he went, "We've taken the first switch, we're going to take the second switch, and we're going to take every single switch you buy." Like, he said it like that, like he'd been possessed by. Yes. It was. Anyway, long and the short of it is they did do that. So
he threatened. One second, he didn't threaten you. Yeah, he didn't tell you. He didn't give you an ultimatum. He said, "Dad, this is how it's going down."
You know, like how people talk about how when you really want to make something happen, you just speak it out loud, and then the universe listens. And that's basically what he did. He went, "That switch will be mine," and the universe answered, because I haven't seen that switch for months. So now, what that means is, and by the way, the kid's already got a PlayStation, all right? So now I'm in a situation where, like a fucking chump, I've paid for two Nintendo Switches, and I'm playing Fortnite on a fucking phone. That's how I've been emasculated by my children.
Mate, this is the future. Running the world already. No. Insane.
Insane.
But I mean, is it an enjoyable experience playing it on the phone or not? Or is it, are you getting away with it? Or is it, are you just doing it to just be like, well, you know what? I'm fine, kids. I can still play Fortnite on my phone. Or are you what? Actually in? Because for me, it was a bit challenging. I'll be honest. I was a bit like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm just going to play pool on my phone instead.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. It's shit. It is proper shit. And it's sort of like you're running around. It takes you 20 minutes to build even a basic set of steps. Do you know what I mean? Because you're fucking around with the control and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I think I'm going to have to buy a third Switch. But do you know something? do you know what my problem is? I've got no issues with buying a third Switch. Do you know what my problem is? Is that I just don't know what it will do to me emotionally if they take that one as well. I don't know what it will do to my self-esteem and my kind of just general psychological well-being if for a third consecutive time those kids manage to take that switch away from me. I don't know if I'll be able to live with myself.
You know what's going to happen? A control pad's going to go missing off the side of your switch and your son's going to be like, "Well, Dad, I needed it and I took it."
Do you know this control pad thing on the Switch, man? It's... So those control pads, I don't know if they make them of eggshell or something like that, but they're the most fragile pieces of shit I've ever encountered, right? And I was about to say I don't understand why they don't make them more robust, but I do. Of course I understand why they make them more robust. It's how Apple make all their money. They make stuff that's designed to crumble in your hand. And so what happens is I have spent more money on Nintendo Switch controllers than I've spent on basic foods and groceries this year. Because those things are a piece of shit. They're an absolute piece of shit. And what annoys me about it is on the occasions when I do play my Switch, I'll say to the kids, I'm going to play the Switch because none of them are playing it. And then they'll go, "Oh, just to let you know, the controller's broken." And I say to them, "Why can't you tell me at the time you fucking break it? Because then I could have sorted it out. I'll be annoyed at that time. But I have the controller now. Now I've got to go and look and try and source one." And by the way, I don't know. The only reason I don't know if you've looked at Nintendo Switches to buy at the moment, but they are, for some reason, have become the hottest commodity in the world. You cannot get a Nintendo Switch for less than £500 now.
It's ridiculous. It's because it's supply and demand, mate. And there is a lot of demand right now. I've noticed that, and this is a little bit of a shift, but I've not only noticed that, but like, and this is, welcome to How to Kill an Hour, the show where old men moan about things being expensive. But my fucking shopping, bruv.
Mate.
There's no deals. There used to be at least like a little, you know, like 4 sausage rolls for £1 when I went to Morrison's. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, some cheap dishwasher tablets this week. Nothing. Nothing is cheap, right? At the moment.
Well, that's the thing that pisses me off, right? Because before we had lockdown, all these companies, because they're in competition and they knew that we had choice and we knew we could go wherever we want, they started knocking down on the prices. They do all these deals. You walk into your supermarket, you look online, there's all these deals. And the way they pitch it to you is, "We're trying to help you out. Every little helps. We just want to make a difference in the home." No, the reason they did it is because they're in a competitive situation, and the second they don't have to, they'll fuck you up the arse in a heartbeat. And now they've been found out, because as soon as they've had the opportunity to bump the prices up, they've all done it. They have all done it. They've all showed their arse, these fucking supermarkets. And what I'm going to say to people is when lockdown finishes and we get out of this, I want you to remember, when you go into Tesco's or Sainsbury's or whatever supermarket you're into, and they go, welcome back. Oh, it's so good to have you back. We've lowered all our prices because we want to help you post-corona. Just remember, they're full of shit. They're absolute full of shit arseholes. Don't allow them to fool you, every little helps. Fuck you, Tesco.
I tell you what, though. I was thinking about people that are doing really well off this, and supermarkets are doing really well. Obviously, you know, game consoles are doing well. App downloads are ridiculous. There's like hundreds of millions flying around, Ramesh, every single day just off apps, yeah? And then I realized who I've been the most loyal customer to throughout this whole lockdown, and that is Amazon, yeah? Bezos, Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, I feel like this is what he was waiting for. This is where it has come into play, because I have never purchased so much off Amazon before, right? And I feel like I'm not the only person. Are you an Amazon? Are you a Prime buyer? Because I'm Prime now, baby.
Do you know the thing is Jeff Bezos, we all know he is basically Satan, right? We all know that. I've not read anything about him that's made me warm to him at all. And yet still, I find myself, because the thing is, somebody says to you, and you know what the thing is? That it's not even necessary stuff. It's like somebody would go to you, oh, there's this beard brush that you can get that's like really sick. And then for some reason, I need it tomorrow morning.
Of course.
And Amazon is the only place that can make that happen. By the way, Amazon, allegedly, don't pay any tax. Jeff Bezos, allegedly, weapons grade bell end, right? So you got all of these things going on. I don't know what Amazon are going to have to do to stop people using them, because at the moment you could find out that Bezos has got a child sex dungeon and you'd still want something within 24 hours and keep shopping there. I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Go on.
I just think that hearing about how Jeff Bezos has done well out of this global pandemic is textbook Jeff Bezos narrative. That, do you know what I mean? The whole world is suffering and it's benefited him hugely. That is exactly what you'd expect from Bezos and Amazon, 100%.
Yeah, but it's undeniable, man. I think now Amazon, like you said, we ain't gonna stop buying from Amazon, but like they are positioned in such a way now that even after lockdown, I don't think Amazon is going to be anything less than one of the most, if it isn't already, the most used consumer outlet ever. Like, I think there's Walmart in America, which is like, they own Asda. They're like the everything. That's why Asda's kind of sell TVs and everything now, yeah. But Amazon's going to be the place where everyone kind of goes to get everything. It's going to be absolutely crazy.
Do you know what?
Do
you know what? Can I just, having talked about what we just talked about, I'd like to reverse my earlier statements about Tesco. Tesco's and all of those Sainsbury's, they're great places. Jeremy, get your stuff.
We love you. We love you guys. Yeah. All of a sudden, you're on Amazon. It's like 7 weeks. What the fuck?
Oh, mate. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
And also, when they just decide, I had a bit of a weird thing with Amazon where, like, so I was going to Australia on tour. And my wife was desperate to get a laptop. So just before I left, I ordered a laptop for her from Amazon. And then I was in Australia and it had been a week. And I'd ordered it for her as a surprise. I'd addressed it to her and everything. And, you know, she'd really wanted a laptop. I thought, this is excellent. You know, she's going to get the laptop. She's going to phone me and thank me. I'm going to come back from Australia. Guaranteed sex, right? You know, all of these things are playing out in my mind, right? Anyway, a week goes by and I've got no message from her to say, I can't believe you got me the laptop, thank you so much, etc. So I'm thinking, either this laptop hasn't arrived or my wife is an ungrateful piece of shit, right? So then I check the Amazon thing and it says delivered. So now I'm like, okay. So she's got the laptop and has chosen not to mention it. So I get in touch with her and I said to her, little thing, have you got the laptop that I ordered for you? And she said, no, I haven't got the laptop. I said, it says it's been delivered. So has anything come? She goes, no, nothing's come. I then look on the delivery number. It's got her signature, right? She signed for it, okay? So now I'm phoning her back And at this point, I'll be honest with you, I'm on the edge of rage, I would describe this as, right? Because she's now, I now know that she's signed for it. So I phone her up. Obviously, I'm in Australia. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to get into a phone argument. That's the worst. And then, you know, when is that going to get resolved? So I said to her, darling, it's just, I'm looking at your signature here. It's just, it looks like you signed for it. She goes, oh, I did sign for something. And she goes and gets what she signed for. And she pulls out an unsigned greetings card, right? And basically, they had delivered just a blank greeting card, okay? Now, I didn't know. At this point, I'm thinking, what the hell's going on? Like, maybe the delivery guys nicked it or something like that. So then I get in touch with Royal Mail. By the way, this story, I realise, is much longer than I thought it was, and I sort of kind of regret starting to tell it, but I'm committed to
Crack on, long-form content. Let's go for it. Stay with us, guys. If not, you know where that 15-second button is, all right? Crack forward. Press it four times. You'll be safe.
Listen, I would say at this stage, four times might not be the one. But anyway, get in touch with Royal Mail, and they say, no, that's what you got. That's what they gave us to deliver. So Amazon had sent me a greeting card, right? And said it was a laptop. I was utterly confused. I emailed Amazon and I said, look, guys, this greeting card that I bought off you, on the picture on the website, it looked a lot like a laptop. And in fact, that's what I thought I was buying. And then they just emailed me going, oh, yeah, sorry about that. And we've refunded you the money. But no explanation. Like, nothing beyond that. And the way that I was responding to it was if that sort of shit happens all the time. Like, it's almost like sometimes, you know, a blank greeting card goes out.
Do you know what it is? With Amazon, they play the numbers game in a very interesting way. So
right,
they're quite automated and they try to be good. So that obviously that's a bad customer experience, right? But with Amazon, they are so big and so confident with their service that they would rather just say, hey, here's your money back straight away, because they know at some point in the future you're still going to buy from them, right? Also on that note, you kind of reminded me that, and you'll notice this now, Amazon, when you put your payment details into Amazon, have you noticed that it's the only company in the world or website that you purchase something from where they don't ask for the three digits on the back of your card? Apparently, this is because they are so big. They said to the banks, you know, Visa, Mastercard, whatever, you know what, guys? If there's a bit of fraud, fuck it, we got it. We'll cover it.
Are you serious?
Think about it. Like, you know, do you remember putting in the last three digits? I'm not asking you to go on Amazon now, but I'm just saying, like, when you next go on Amazon, when you next have to update your payment details or anything like that, they do not ask for the three digits on the back of the card.
That is, and do you know what that is? That is testament to how lazy we are as human beings. Because what they've said is, there is a possibility what you buy from Amazon is so impulse that they're trying to minimise the number of clicks to take you from seeing that thing to it being on the way to you. And the idea that you might have to put those three digits in is an extra moment of reflection where you go, do you know what? I don't think I need that anal sponge. And so you then come completely back out of the thing.
Yeah, and they did some maths. They were like, look, over the million people that almost bought anal sponges, when it got to the point where they put in the three digits, we lost half of them.
Yeah
So we did the maths, and you know what, Visa will pay the fraud. If there's like $100,000 worth of fraud, it's all right, because you know, we'll make it back. So it's quite interesting, very interesting. Go on, what was that?
No, I was gonna say, listen, that was, you made that story worth it, well done.
See what I did? I took the anal sponge and I took that hotline and I made it into a hot song.
Oh, really? Good.
Jay-Z'd it. So you do put out a lot of content, and we are going to talk about the new stuff that you've got out at the moment and the really clever way that you're putting together Ranganation. And I just want to say, like, have you been spending time being able to write and stuff? Because some comedians said it's been a great time to write, and others have been like, it's not really a great time to write. How has that affected kind of your creative?
Well, it was difficult early on because you're sort of processing what's happening, and so the idea of writing anything becomes sort of difficult. And also the other thing is, you know, I've got like scripts that I'm working on, and at the beginning of this lockdown I thought to myself, well, this, we're never gonna fucking make this, it's the end of the world, I don't know why I'm bothered. You know, it's very difficult to motivate yourself to write this stuff, but I've actually kind of settled into it now. I think as time has gone on, it's been kind of nice, because actually, you know, writing doesn't proportionately reward the amount of time you spend on it. So, for example, when I'm writing stand-up, I could spend all day trying to write some stand-up and come up with very little. And then the next day, I could be sat at my desk for like 10 minutes and a fully formed routine just pops into my head just like that. And so you just don't know how that's going to come down. And so when you're under time pressures, it means that often you're writing stuff where you think, well, this isn't the best stuff, but I'm on a deadline. So I've just got, you know, do you know what I mean? Whereas now I'm writing stuff because I want to write stuff. Do you know what I mean? And there's a couple of things where like I've come up with ideas for stuff and we're now developing it. And it wasn't, there was no timeline on that. Nobody had asked me to do it. It's just because it sort of came to me in the moment and I was just free to write because I thought, fuck it. I'm, you know, like I've got a bit of time. I've got this idea. Let me try and take this time to flesh it out. But what I would say is, you know, if I was to offer any advice, I'm not in a position to offer any advice because I run my life terribly. But what I would say is I just don't think people should put themselves under any kind of pressure. Do you know what I mean? I think it's like, I think this kind of underlying hum of anxiety that you have going on because of what we're going through, I don't think you should ignore that. Do you know what I mean? And so if that means that some days you just watch all of The Last Dance in one sitting, then that's okay. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't, you don't have to be like producing shit all the time, you know? So, but the truth of it is I'm kind of up and down about it. Sometimes I feel properly inspired to do stuff. And other times I think I'm just going to eat today. That's going to be my target.
Oh, fucking are you? Listen, I had a chat with some of my close mates yesterday and we have all collectively put on weight. Nobody I know has lost weight during this season. I mean, biscuits and donuts, I can't have them in the house, Ramesh, because I'm smashing them, bruv. Why would you not when they're that close? It's rude.
I know. I realised that the only reason I ever stop eating is because I don't have food in my hand. And now I'm in a situation where I can have food all the time. And I do have food all the time. It's absolutely disgusting.
All of the time. But how is that going alongside the fitness classes? I'd like you to describe them to our listener as well. Please crack on.
Well, the truth is that I can't stop eating, and so I said to my wife, if I don't get on top of some exercise, I'm gonna die. Yeah. I'm actually gonna you're gonna have to cut me out of this house or some shit. Like I'm in deep trouble, and so. My wife's a bit of a fitness fanatic. So one of the things that we've got into, it's two things actually. The first thing is that I've been doing for a while is this Peloton, which is this like, it's a spin bike. It's pretty expensive. It's a spin bike and they've got this, it's got a screen on it and it's got all these online classes. So you can log on and then these like, there's some British ones, but it's mainly American instructors going, it's time to upgrade your hustle. Huh? We didn't come here to play. We came here to maximize our gains and all this shit. And then you sort of sweat out your ass for 45 minutes and you feel good and there's a leaderboard and all that shit. So I've been doing that. But the new thing that I've been doing during lockdown is Zoom fitness classes. Basically, what this is the clue's in the name, really. It's a fitness class on Zoom. So basically, the instructor comes on. The whole class are in like a gallery view on Zoom. And then he starts shouting at you to start doing exercises, basically. So my wife and I have been doing this. We initially did it in the kitchen. The problem is that when you do a fitness class, which I haven't done for a long time, you're all facing forward, right? So your awareness of what anybody else is doing is pretty limited. When you're doing a Zoom class, everybody's looking at the whole grid of everybody else taking part. So you're on screen. And when we were doing it in the kitchen, we couldn't do it because there's so much debris from what we've been eating over the past week, just in the background. It just undermines your whole thing. So we started doing it in the garden. But this guy, man, he's a really good guy, but he'll just like be like this. Okay, if anybody stops doing it mid-set, I'm going to add another minute onto this. So who's dropping out? Who's dropping out? And then you're just shitting yourself that this guy's going to go, oh, because Ramesh didn't do a burpee, you've all got to do 20 more. Well done, Ramesh. If everybody's angry about having to do more, thank Ramesh, right? So what I've ended up doing is like just occasionally like jumping out of frame or pretending that I've accidentally star jumped out of the camera just so that I can just sit down for a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what you should do? You should just freeze for a bit and just go...
No, do you know the other thing though? My wife is such a, what I've discovered about her during this lockdown, such a fucking teacher's pet, man. Like, she's always trying to squeeze out extra reps. When he goes 1 second left, she'll always do an extra one. And then he goes, oh, Lisa, well done, man. You're really pushing it. And she's saying, fuck you. We're supposed to be doing this together. Do you know what I mean? It's supposed to be a supportive thing. Not you throw me under the bus by doing your little extra reps. Anyway.
Does she say words of like encouragement? Because that really fucking jars me. I'll be honest with you. Like when I'm in fitness classes, which I rarely am, I like to work out by myself. But when I was in fitness classes, when you've got like someone who's your mate with you and they're like, come on, give it a bit more, give it more. I'm like, fuck you, fuck it. You concentrate on your reps. Right? Don't watch my reps.
I like to do things where nobody is commenting on what I do not need a review. All right. Yeah. Just let me, it's as much as I could do to be here. Do not critique me. I do not need a trip advisor on how I'm doing my abdominal workout. All right. So just relax.
Work champ.
Champ. You know what she does? She combines that with finding my movements funny. And not deliberately so, not in a way that's supportive or encouraging of my comedic talent. She just finds the way I do certain things funny. So uppercuts, for example, she says that looks like I'm shaking some sort of instrument. Burpees, she finds hilarious. Press-ups, she says my form is comedically bad. So it's kind of like doing an exercise class during your own comedy roast. Do you know what I mean? Where you're just trying to get fit and there's just some yappy little shit next to you going, have you noticed the way that Ramesh does press-ups? His ass is so high up in the air. It's like he's presenting to an approaching dog. You know, shit like that.
It's like bullying at its finest. Right, so from live streaming to streaming, though, I was going to ask you what you've been streaming lately. You mentioned The Last Dance. I mean, I don't know how big an NBA fan you are. I know you're into hip-hop. I know hip-hop and NBA are quite closely related, but how was that for you? Have you managed to watch the lot? Because the last few episodes dropped this week.
Yeah, I haven't watched the last few episodes, but I have been watching it. The truth is I recently got into NBA because me and Rob Beckett, we did a show for Sky One where we throw ourselves into different things, and one of those things was the NBA. And you're right to point out the hip hop thing, because basketball has always been something that I thought I should be into because its connections with hip hop are so strong, you know, and like the whole footwear thing, the music that they play during the game, everything about it is hip hop. Do you know what I mean?
It's hip hop. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so many basketball references in hip hop as well. So, but the problem is for me was my inherent snobbery towards American sports. You know, the whole thing about, you know, I'm a football fan, so a goal being a climactic moment in a game to me is good. You know, that's how I like my sports to be. Whereas basketball is so high scoring, I just think to myself, what the fuck? How can you have a climax to a game or whatever? But so anyway, we started looking at the NBA, and Rob and I went to a couple of games, and we did a bit of training and stuff like that. And we went to a game, and it was like, we watched the game. It was the Rockets against the Clippers, right? And we watched the game, and I was like, this game is so exhilarating. Like, I was watching it just going, this game is amazing. Like, it went right down to the wire. It was like, crowd were going mad. It was gripping the whole way through. And I said to Rob, like, how lucky were we, man, that we saw that game. And then I watched another game, and it was exactly the same. And then, gradually, I started texting my cousins from the States and going, can I just ask a question? Have I just been really lucky with the games I've been watching? Or are they all like this? And they go, look, man, what can I tell you? Like, most games are like that. And then I just fucking fell in love with it, man. Like, I properly fell in love with it. I downloaded the NBA app. I've, like, got all the games, like, to my phone and to my laptop, watching everything. Obviously, they're not playing at the moment. And so, I kind of came into The Last Dance with a newfound enthusiasm for it. Do you know what I mean? And it really, in a way, it was kind of life-changing for me, because I've got to an age now where I thought all of my interests are now ring-fenced. Do you know what I mean? I know what I'm into. This is the shit I like. I don't need to find any more stuff. Do you know what I mean? And NBA has just... I genuinely... Mate, honestly, I was like, this is the sport I've been missing my whole life, man. Like, it's such, and then you add to that the hip hop, you know, the fashion, like all of that shit. It's fucking like perfect storm of a sport for me, man. And I feel so bad actually in a way that I let that scoring thing and my snobbery kind of stop me from accessing it all this time, because what, and also, I mean, let's, you know, there's also the sexy element of dunking. I mean, that is,
oh yeah,
that is so, so good, man. And when we were doing a thing with Rob, they obviously, Rob and I mean, you've seen Rob, he doesn't have any of the physical attributes required to be a basketball player. And he made me look suited to the game. Do you know what I mean? But what they did was, is they, we went and played at, played in LA, and we played on one of the street courts, and they lowered one of the hoops for us so that we could dunk. And even knowing that it was basically a school height hoop, dunking, my God, it makes you feel absolutely incredible. It's so good, man.
We did see you play in the new series that's out now. We do see you and Rob play a game of 1-on-1, where I believe was it first to 3 points, was it? How did that fare out for you, Romesh?
That was an abject fucking humiliation, man. Because we were playing with some of the best street ballers from like the area and stuff, and they were like showing us what they're able to do, and then they were made to sit and watch two of the most pathetically coordinated human beings in history engage in a game of 1-on-1. It's so bad, because the only other problem with it is you think you look so much better than you actually are. Do you know what I mean? Because like when we were playing, it felt like quite a hard-fought game. I knew we weren't as good as Senor Kakalaki and the other guys that we were playing with.
What a name.
Yeah.
Senor Kakalaki.
Yeah.
Freaking hell.
So we knew we weren't as good as them. But we thought we were, you know, passable. And then I saw some of the footage, because the camera guy's there. They said, oh, do you want to have a look at how it looked? And honestly, man, it was like an out-of-body experience, because I was just like, is that what you guys are all sitting watching this whole time? That. It's so bad, bro.
I'm sorry to be laughing like this, brother. I was crying, man. It's fucking hilarious. Because did it really take as long as it took you in the show to get a point as well? So they've lowered the rim, right? You've been trained. By the way, were you really in the hood as well? Like,
yeah.
You went to the hood, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You went to like a hood court in South Central.
Yeah.
You've met some street ballers who are like elite players in this totally, it's not NBA. Street ball's like a bit rougher and tougher.
Yeah.
And they give you this training class. So you're being watched by these elite street ballers.
Do you know what's so bad about it? Is that like they were so nice to us and then they watched us play. And it was difficult for them to continue being nice, because you've seen somebody or might be so shit at something, it's almost a disrespect to what you
did. It was almost disrespectful, yeah. It was... You can see it. Watch this episode, guys. You can see it in their faces. I swear Rob goes to spud one of them and it becomes the awkward. One of them tries to handshake and one of them tries to spud. Oh, mate. Oh,
yeah.
Amazing Rob, episode.
Rob,
thank you.
Rob tried to overcompensate for his out-of-contextness and, you know,
yeah, man,
didn't go well.
So, yeah, Rob and Romesh, series 2 is out now. And, you know, I kind of rewatched the whole of the first series because it was just hilarious. And we've seen you guys kind of try and conquer everything from DJing, country music, cricket. And in this new series, you've kind of like, you've cracked on straight away, haven't you? Like, so you've got NBA in there. What else can we look forward to in that? Yeah, go on.
So we did. This series, we did two episodes in South Africa looking at cricket.
Yeah.
And then we obviously did the NBA episode. We went to LA and we also went to Paris. I mean, and then the other thing we did was ballet with the Royal Birmingham Ballet, what they're called, Royal Academy of Ballet Birmingham or something. I can't remember the exact name. But that wasn't good. The thing that I found the most humiliating about that ballet thing was ballet dancers have got incredible physiques. And Rob and I didn't look good in baggy basketball gear. So in that tight-fitting ballet stuff, loads of bit like the production team get going, oh, this is really funny, this is really funny. And I go, well, what's funny about this? We've just put the stuff on. We're not telling any jokes. I'm not doing a bit here. I've just literally just put the fucking clothes on. So you tell me what's funny about it. Because what I think you're saying is, your bodies look funny in these clothes.
Well, we all know the physique of people that do ballet. And, you know, I mean, they're maybe not as tall as you, Ramesh.
Their asses are fucking unbelievable, mate. Male ballet dancers, right? Their asses are just insane.
They got booties.
Mate, so... And I listen, I've talked about this in the show. It's a thing that I've made my peace with. I've got no ass whatsoever. I've literally got a line at the top of my legs, right? And then you go into this you go into this room with these ballet dancers and perfectly formed junk in their trunk, man. It's just amazing. They look like they're carved out of marble. Do you know what I mean? They could sign their name with those asses. It's
it could butter toast.
Oh, 100%
with those asses.
100%.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean that was an interesting episode to watch. I feel like they set you up with a super hard one there, because ballet is, everybody knows, you start from the age of 4, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you may be at the top.
Mate, thank you so much for making the most valid point, because they were going, and then you know, when the production team were talking to you, they go, so you know, you're gonna sort of see how hard it is, and I go, well, hold on a minute. Neither of us think this is easy. You're talking to us like we came into this thinking our ballet's a piece of piss. Nobody thinks it's a piece of piss.
Nobody, yeah.
People think, you know, the truth is, my perception of it is it's boring and I'm not going to enjoy it in the slightest. And also, not only am I not going to enjoy it in the slightest, I don't think they give a shit if I enjoy it in the slightest, because it's exclusive and elitist. That was my preconception going into it. And... That was the thing that changed for me. I went into it knowing that ballet was hard, right? And I came out of it having that confirmed. The thing I didn't realise is how accessible they want it to be. Do you know what I mean? They want more people to come and watch ballet. They want more people to watch it in the same way that everybody goes and watches musical theatre or whatever, right? But so that was the thing that changed for me. But it being difficult, come on, mate. Nobody thinks ballet's easy. Nobody.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Nah, 100%. I mean, what challenges have we got coming up in this new season? Episodes that we might have seen. Give us a little taster of other things that may have been...
cute laughing thinking you guys play basketball and do ballet, but sorry. They just stood out to me as amazing bits. But like, what else really was a grind for you?
Well, you know, in the basketball one, the basketball, obviously you talked about the humiliating experience of training with the guys. One of the worst things that we did was we had to have a colonic irrigation in that show because that was part of Rob's... Rob just thought it was part of an LA lifestyle thing, so let's go and have a colonic. And I didn't want to do it because... Well, because I didn't want to fucking do it. Well, you know, I don't think you need to give an explanation. You don't want to do a colonic. It's weird having water pumped into you via your arsehole. I did think to myself, well, I'm probably going to be all right because I'm vegan. So, you know, you hear stories about people like a lamb chop comes out from like 1997 or whatever. I didn't think that was going to happen to me because I don't eat meat, right? And then, honestly, one of the worst things that ever happened to me, and then to have it televised was even worse, a completely formed, fully formed button mushroom came out of my arsehole. Fully formed. They didn't even look like it had been chewed.
But you'd think, I would have thought, because I'm ignorant to colonic irrigation, right? I would have thought that they would have hidden the contents coming out of you, kind of away from you, but
mate,
from what
mate,
I gather, they analyse it.
Mate, there's a fucking viewing tube, all right? There's a glass tube where you can see everything coming out. I had to sit and watch Rob do it. I watched stuff come out of the inside of Rob Beckett. And then he sat and watched. By the way, I did it quietly. He was cackling like a fucking demon the whole time I was doing it. So it was horrible. It was absolutely horrendous. And then in sort of, you know, keeping up the arsehole theme, one of the things that we had to do in South Africa was we went on safari and they wanted to see if a rhino was pregnant. So we went out with a vet to see if this rhino was pregnant. So the way that you do that is you insert a probe. You don't want to cause any harm to the baby, so you don't go in through the frou-frou. What you do is you go in through the arsehole of the rhino with the probe. Now the problem with that is obviously the arsehole that whole cavity is, you know, it's got shit in it. So Rob and I were tasked with the job of emptying out the rhino's anal cavity. So we had to put on like a plastic glove up to the shoulder and then just make sure that it was completely free of... You know, the problem is that when you grip onto something inside it, you don't know if you're gripping shit or actual rhino. Do you know what I mean? So you just have to sort of feel around and figure out if that's a ball of shit or a ball of the inside of a rhino's anus and then just sort of just keep pulling it out. I've got to be honest with you. Do you remember when Rebecca Lewes wanked off that pig? I did think this might be our equivalent low point. Do you know what I mean? pulling shit out of a rhino's ass.
I wanted to. First things first. How do you think a rhino feels when it wakes up from that ordeal? Does it feel like it's had a colonic irrigation, or does it feel violated? I'm just curious.
I don't know. I wonder if it just sort of wakes up and goes. Before I went to sleep, I could swear I felt like I needed a shit. Yeah, but I feel like completely great now. I feel sort of...
Yeah.
I feel light on my feet, yeah.
Shit was so good I passed out. But that wasn't the only thing you did with shit in South Africa, though, was it?
Oh, my God, mate. So when we went on safari, one of the games they play is... I'll be honest with you, I was very against this, but because Rob agreed to do it, I agreed to do it. Is this sort of shit spitting where you kind of pick up a gazelle dropping, and then you try and spit it as far as you possibly can. Would you have done that?
I don't think I could. I would have to be there and see the shit. Because what I didn't know was, is it an old dry shit? I was thinking, because when you did it, when Rob did it, because he's kind of like, oh yeah, cool, yeah, I'll do that from watching the show. And you kind of think about it, but you had a think about it. I was like, if it's a dry pellet, cool. If it's like a squidgy wet pellet, fuck no, because that's getting squashed between my teeth and I'm not pushing shit through my teeth ever in my life. Now there's a point where you kind of just spit it out because you're like, I realized I've got shit in my mouth or something like that.
Well, yeah, the only way to play that game is to disengage from what it is you're doing, and then
100%.
And then all of a sudden you remember that it's shit. The other issue is if you put the shit in your mouth, even if it's like a dried pellet or whatever, and they start talking to you, And then what happens is you are rehydrating that shit and it starts to become shit again. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, so I'm like, once I'm loaded, once I'm locked and loaded, it's go, it's go time. I don't need to have a chat with you. All right, let's just get this done. That was the problem I had. They kept like getting us to put it in our mouths and go, right, so what are you going to do? I don't give a fuck right now. I just need you to get me to the point where this isn't in my mouth now. Okay. So that was a problem.
And because it's TV as well, was it, was that, I take it that was one of the shoots where they didn't say, oh, that's great, but we just want to get that from another angle. Can we do that again?
Mate, there's some times where I just go, you've got that. So, do you know what I mean? And that was one of those times. We had a thing where like, I did a show in the States and one of the things that we did, we thought it'd be funny to scare my wife and my mum. We the back door to the house, we put like a big sheet of sugar glass in it. And I just said, if you think I was boring, if you think I'm boring, watch this. And I jumped through the window, right? And they obviously don't know it's sugar glass and they all shit themselves or whatever. And it was terrifying to do because I just kept thinking I'm going to get the wrong door here and just kill myself. And then when we jumped through the door, the director goes to me, we might need to get that again. And I went, nah, we ain't getting it.
You got that.
Yeah. If you haven't got that covered, you're gonna have to do a fucking animation because I am not jumping through the door again.
Exactly.
I mean, go.
Yeah. Crack on. Yeah. No. Crack on.
No. All I was gonna say is I had to have a this. I sort of started to regret saying it because it's anus themed as well. But
oh, crack on.
I had to have an enema in Sri Lanka, and for Asian Provocateur, this TV show I did a while ago, and they lost the memory card, the camera that was actually on me, they lost that memory card. It went missing in transit or something like that. So that they said to me, oh, we might have to get you to do that again. And I was like, I don't see that being in my future. So actually, when you watch the show now, they just cut to the outside of the building and play some music.
Okay. I thought you were going to say it was someone else's ass that was stunt ass.
I've got an anus double.
Yeah. Can you imagine the auditions for that? Fucking hell. But yeah, before we move on though, Rob and Ramesh versus, I mean, a big part of the show is you guys have known each other for a while, right? I take it from the chemistry on the show because it comes across. But fuck me, do you piss each other off? How real is this pissing of each other off? Are you guys hyping out for the cam? Or is this all really how you rub each other up?
No, it's genuine, man. I mean, look, what I would say is that that is our relationship. Do you know what I mean? So Rob is a really good friend of mine, but I would say 90% of the time we are like ripping the shit out of each other and not in a fun bantery way, bickering. We are bickery. Do you know what I mean? And like sometimes, like we hosted the Raw Variety together and like most of the time I was backstage, I was like, Rob, just fucking chill out. That was like me sort of backstage because he's so excitable. So what you see on screen is genuinely how we are. Do you know what I mean? It is kind of obviously it's heightened because Rob and I, when we normally hang out, we're not on our way to anally evacuate a rhinoceros. Do you know what I mean? So that puts you under a level of stress that means that those situations are heightened. Normally Rob and I just be having a drink. You're not in those kind of high pressure situations where tensions are high, tempers are short or whatever. We're just chilling out. So it's not exaggerated, but I would say it's escalated by the pressure of the situation. Like when we did, you know, the country and western one, we had to write and perform a country and western song at a club in Nashville. The pressure of doing that did mean that we started arguing with each other. I mean, that just happened because you're just stressed as fuck. Do you know what I mean? So, and Rob has got absolutely no musical talent whatsoever. So when we get back to the hotel, we were starting trying to practice it. And what was happening is the more that Rob was rehearsing it, the worse he was getting at it. And so that, you know, so then we started having a go at each other then. But I'm never thinking to myself, I hate this guy. It's just, it's like family. You know how you go at family or whatever. It's like that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you guys definitely get at it, man. And like, honestly, fucking great show, Rob and Ramesh versus, man. Make sure you check it out. That's on Sky at the moment, innit? I think you can stream it and also watch it.
I think it's on Now TV.
Whatever type of Sky you got. Yeah, Now TV as well, aka Sky.
Yes, basically.
That is, isn't it? Yeah. Basically. was like, why don't you just call it Sky Online? No, no, we'll call it Nine TV. All right,
I know. It's a weird rebranding decision, but yeah, fair play.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Another show that's on right now, Ranganation Series 2. First question off the bat, which is going to be related to the show. Can you describe what I am seeing right now and where you are for those that aren't seeing the video clips that we're putting?
Yeah, so I am in my son's bedroom. Now, the reason I'm in my son's bedroom is because they're doing homeschooling and this is the only other room that has a desk in it. Now normally I'd be doing this in my garage, but because we're filming Ranganation from the garage, that is currently like a little TV studio setup. So that is why I'm having to do it from the bedroom. Now, I did Graham Norton the other night and I did that interview from this room. So this is the backdrop for that interview. And they said to me, try not to mention that it's your son's bedroom because people think it's a bit out of order that you've kicked your son out of his bedroom. So now everybody that watched Norton, bearing in mind that show goes out internationally, think that I sleep in a bunk bed and have some stars around my window.
It's one of the bunk beds with the guard to stop you rolling out as well, like your ADHD kid. Saying that because I needed one of those guards because I've many a time, I still managed to hurdle out of it during the night as well. So what a way to wake up.
So I just had to do this chat and then on my Twitter, just what the fuck's up with Romesh's bedroom? And I'm just like...
Yeah, it looks very cozy, but yeah. I mean, the total converse to that is the studio setup you got for Ranganation Series 2. It looks proper. It looks really, really good, man. How'd you get that set up, if you don't mind me asking? Because it looks great.
Well, the truth is that we were looking at all of these, and I've got to give credit to Zeppatron, a production company, because we talked about this at length about how we were going to do this, because the thing was, it was a bit of a, we're in a weird situation in terms of, obviously, you know, with shows like the Ranganation, like that kind of topical studio shows, you're trying to make them in lockdown conditions, but you also want them to look like a TV show. And I think, like, initially, people are kind of accepting, there's a certain amount that they'll accept, you know, that it's not going to be like how it normally is when you watch a lot of these shows. Like, Have I Got News For You and shows like that, they're all doing it on lockdown. But we just wanted it to look as much like a proper studio TV show as we possibly could with it still being at my house. Do you know what I mean? And we didn't want it to be, you know, the discussion was we sort of didn't want it to look like I was in my kitchen, or we sort of didn't want it to look like I was in my garage. We wanted it to look like you're having an experience of watching a proper TV show or a snazzy TV show, I guess, for want of a better word. So the production team came in and the set designer and stuff looked at that garage. You know, I had to do a load of for the first time in my life, I had to do like floor plans and send them to them so that they could get an idea of what they're doing. And they just basically transformed that garage. I mean, we had to do it. It's very difficult because we had to do it all social distancing. So I would like disinfect the garage keys, leave them outside my front door. A load of people dressed up like the end of E.T. would turn up in my driveway and like go and start doing it. And we weren't allowed anywhere near the garage while they were working on that because they all had to social distance from each other. They had to social distance from us. They were then disinfect. You know, it was all done like I had to have briefings and shit like that about how it was going to be done and stuff like that. And we had to notify the neighbours because we're having broadcast trucks and shit like that. But then they sent me a photo from the garage and they said, oh, this is what it looks like. I just couldn't believe it, man. Like they totally transformed it. It was amazing. It just doesn't look like a garage. It's amazing what they've done. But the other thing that's key to that show is the tech, because the Ranganation, for those of you that haven't watched it, the original version of it is me talking to two guests, comics or TV personalities or whatever, and 20, 25 members of the public, the Ranganation, right? So obviously that's a lot of people to try and coordinate for the show. And we just thought, well, there's no point doing the Ranganation if we don't have similar numbers. It would be so shit if it was me plus two members of the Ranganation and two guests. It just wouldn't be the same show. So they looked into the technology of being able to, first of all, have 20 people on the screen in front of me, which is, you know, one thing. But then for me to be able to interact with them in real time, and then whenever I go to one of them, a close up of them appears, so that they're there for the TV thing, and also being able to interact with the guests and have those guests talk to the Ranganation. So the tech setup of it was crazy. And also, they're not allowed to have camera people in my garage. So it's all like little R2-D2 looking cameras in the garage or whatever. And we just had to rehearse the shit out of it, basically. It's like they set it up in the garage, and we spent the best part of 2 weeks where every day we went into that garage, we would do a rehearsal, something would go wrong, we'd have to go away and fix it, we'd come back again, and eventually it got to the point to where it was today. So, I mean, I've sort of waffled a bit there, but the point I'm trying to make is, it took a shit ton of work, mostly not by me, I'll be honest with you. I just sort of rocked up.
Appreciate the honesty, but it looks good though. I've got to be honest, there's a few lockdown shows, naming no names, and it literally is shot in the kitchen, and I'm like, look mate, you didn't even put a sign up in the background. Yeah, Amazon could deliver you one in 24 hours. Come on, put some effort in. But no, it looks really good, really really good.
Yeah.
And in terms of the Ranganation, I mean, there's another big star of the show as well, and that is your mum. Got a quick clip of her.
Mum, what did you think of the monologue?
You can do a bit better than that.
What's wrong with it?
Why don't you practice?
I have. I just turn up and pull it out my arse. No. There's an auto cue.
It doesn't look like that you have practiced. Like that.
Mum, this side barely functions.
I mean, and obviously that's from season one where you had a live audience, but she is in season two as well, isn't she? She is joining us, and she is as it's great to see her as opinionated as ever. I love the relationship that you have with your mum.
Again, that's another thing where, like, that is just how my mum is. Do you know what I mean? And I think that when I first started working with her, I worked with her on this travel show, I was doing stuff with her on this travel show. Part of the thing was is that she kept on being polite or trying to, you know, not be herself for the TV. And then as soon as you get her to switch that off and just be herself and act like she normally does, it is great. Do you know what I mean? But it's just constant, mate. It's the tech. She cannot work it or do anything with it. Like, they wanted her sound to be good, so we did a rehearsal. I couldn't hear her properly the whole way through the rehearsal, right? So we're doing this thing, and I was just like, Jesus Christ, this is a nightmare, because if we can't get her sound sorted out, it's going to be so difficult for her to be part of the show. And then we got to the end of the show, and I said, Mum, your sound still wasn't good. And then the director said, Shanti, did you get the mic that we sent you? She said, yeah, but I didn't put it on, darling, because of my blouse. I said, so can I just get this straight? You've done the whole show, the whole rehearsal, without the mic connected. She went, yeah. I said, did you think they had to pay people to come out on an essential journey to deliver a microphone to your house, and it was too much hassle for you to attach it to your lapel? I couldn't believe it, man. I couldn't. And it's just stuff like she'll go, like during one of the rehearsals, honestly, it sounds like I'm making up. During one of the rehearsals, I kept on asking her questions. She wasn't saying anything. I text her at the end. I go, so what happened? She goes, oh, the whole thing was frozen the whole time. I said, well, did you think about telling anyone? Did you just think that we were just going to carry on with the show and that was it, and you just react to what you thought might have happened? I said, you've got to be able to watch what's happening. It's crazy, man. That has been one of the toughest things of getting my mum up. We had an emergency yesterday. We recorded one yesterday. We had an emergency because her curtains fell down in the room that she was filming in, and she didn't know how to put them back up. So I had to send my brother and a member of production on an emergency journey to her house to sort it out. It's insane.
I love it, man. I mean, it does add a nice element to the show, having your mum's opinion alongside everything else. And I got another quick clip to play as well. She's not really shy at kind of, she tells it how it is.
Would you like it if your mother was dating someone new and having sex in your home? Or would you be okay with that now?
She's like...
I don't know. It depends how loud she was being, I guess. Aww. So, I definitely wouldn't want to, like, be lying in bed and just say, oh, you're absolutely smashing it.
Yeah. Love it, love it. And she does say something great after that. But if you want to listen to that, then you make sure you listen to the roundup of series one there on the BBC iPlayer. There you go. But mate, I love it. Like, you're giving your mum bants. She's giving it back as well. It's great. Also, I want to know if this is true, because there's rumour going around and there is some footage. I've seen it, but I wasn't sure. Did you really have a tattoo put on your body of one of the Ranga Nation? And was it really a response to a tattoo that they had?
Yeah. I mean, that's all legit. So what happened was, is there's a guy in the Ranga Nation called Metalhead, and he revealed last series that he had got like a silhouette of me tattooed onto his body. I think it was on his calf. It wasn't his calf, and he showed. Yep. Unfortunately for him, me in silhouette looks very similar to Colonel Sanders, so it's difficult to sort of. Fully ascertain who the tribute's to. But it's a good tattoo. Anyway, we were talking about something cool to do for the last episode of the series. And I said to them, I can't remember who came up with the idea, but we had this idea of me getting it on my leg. And the production team were like, we just get it like drawn on. But I just sort of felt like it's such a lame thing to do, is like have a drawing done and it's not. So I said to them, I think we should have actually have the tattoo done. Because like, that's what he did. And I said, otherwise, there's no point. I think it feels a bit out of order to go, oh, look, mate, I've got this tattoo, and then it wipes off. I just don't think that's right. Obviously, then them and the BBC started to panic because they've got a duty of care or whatever. They don't want to be seen to be encouraging me to permanently mark my body or whatever. So they sent a cameraman to the tattoo place, and I had to do a statement to the camera to say, neither the BBC nor the production company have forced me to do this. I'm doing this of my own volition. I'm choosing to do this and all this shit. But so I had to do all of that. But I did get the tattoo properly done. Yeah, and he loved it. It was a nice moment. Do you know what I mean? I say it's a nice.
Yeah, moment. It was class.
It made about a minute of the edit, and it's on my body permanently. So I'll leave it up to you as to whether it was worth it or not. But it's done.
I thought it was quite charming. It's something that will go down in the books as a cute thing that Ramesh did, I reckon, man. So, like, what's your relationship with the guys off the show? Because obviously, throughout the first season, they were there throughout the filming of it. So I feel like the rapport must have grown in a way with you guys.
Yeah, I mean. That you can't help but get to know those guys and you know, keep in touch with a lot of them. And, you know, between last series and this series, I was on tour before obviously everything stopped like that. And they, you know, a few of them came to shows and I met up with the masters and stuff like that. And you get to really know them in the same way that the audience do. I think actually... I don't do it because of this, but I do think it genuinely helps the show if you've got a proper rapport with these people, because you kind of get an idea of what they might think about certain things. You know who to go to on certain topics. We discuss, like, obviously a wide variety of stuff. And sometimes I think to myself, well, I know, for example, that Wheeler Dealer will have a strong opinion on this, or Eco Vegan will have an opinion on this. So you sort of know who to go to on certain things. So yeah, you can't help but develop a relationship. Having said that, if this series gets cancelled, I won't be in touch with any of them ever again.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, what is this? Wait, this, I think we've got a clip of the vegan.
I learned how to hug a tree properly.
Thank you.
Okay, let me just say something. I'm a vegan. You're not doing us any favours here.
So, yeah, Ramesh.
First of all, why are you hugging a tree?
We were at a stately home and my husband hugged the front of a tree, so I hugged the other end of it.
Okay.
And then he said, you're not hugging it properly.
They had a tree
and apparently.
So yeah, she's a tree hugging vegan. Like you said, not doing you any favours over there. What's vegan life like during lockdown? Forgot to ask you that.
It's okay. It's actually better, to be honest with you, for me, because when we're not on lockdown, my wife doesn't bother to get me anything in the weekly shop. But now she's started to become worried about me, and so she buys loads of vegan stuff for me. So it's pretty good, actually. It's not bad. The only problem is most of like the delivery places and stuff that I used to go to for vegan stuff, they're all shut at the moment. So it's only kind of like the little. like local places, which I do obviously want to support, but the only thing they can send you is a kebab. So it's not really ideal for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not really the one, is it, man? I just feel like my cooking game's gone up a little bit during this whole lockdown as well.
Yeah.
I feel like I've experimented more.
Yeah, 100%. In fact, that's one of the things we're talking about in the Ranga Nation is like people's go-to. Because what actually happens is in lockdown is people start making shit up. It's not even about following recipes. They've got some weird snack that they that they've decided to has become their go-to thing. And so my wife has been doing a lot of experimenting. She made, what did she make? She's been making a lot of Mexican food. And it's difficult because she's experimenting. She's trying stuff out. Sometimes she freestyles it. And sometimes it's, I'll be honest with you, it's dreadful. But she has put the effort in. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of, she'll go to me, can I have your honest opinion on this? And I go, well, my honest opinion is it'd make me a real prick if I said that this tasted like what it really tastes like, because you spent an hour and a half on it. So I'll just say it's good. I mean, it's thank you for making the effort, you know?
That's what I'm good at, that one.
But
drinks glass of water.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. Listen, that's not every time. Only most of the time.
I hear that.
So you know, every now and again, she's come out with a blinder. So yeah, I do definitely think kitchen game has stepped up. I've definitely started experimenting more.
100%. Well, you know, I know that I can eat a whole packet of Pringles in one go. And you know what? It's not a recipe, but it is, really. You know, once you pop, you can't stop. Before we I've got just a couple of more things I want to talk to you about, because, you've got so much stuff coming out. But on Ranga Nation, you also play a game, which is great, which is called, I might get this wrong, who's wearing trousers? Are they wearing trousers or not?
Trousers or no trousers.
That's it. Trousers or no trousers.
Yeah.
And it's basically a game where you find out if on Zoom someone is wearing trousers or no trousers. I did this with a guest that we've got that's coming out in a couple of weeks' time. I'm not allowed to say who they are just yet, but a big music artist. And they were wearing pyjamas whilst they had a full ensemble of like fancy clothes up top. So it's only right I asked you, Ramesh, are you wearing trousers or not, mate?
I can confirm to you I am actually wearing trousers. So
there you go. He's got jeans on. There you go.
Yeah, I wouldn't normally do that, but I just think if you do a show that has an item called trousers or no trousers, you have to be prepared to be called out on it. Do you know what I mean? So
100%.
Yeah. So I was ready, but I'll be butt naked the second that we finish this interview.
Oh, bruv.
Yeah.
Why not? I'm not being funny, but I am not going through much underwear at all, bro. Yeah. No, totally not necessary. Yeah. I mean, yeah, laundry, saving loads of money on that. So, misadventures from your sofa.
Yeah.
Go.
Well, we did we did two series of a show called Misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan, where actually the original remit of that show was that we were going to go to the most dangerous places in the world and see if they're worth going on holiday to. But then what happened was is that when we told them what countries we wanted to go to, the BBC kept saying, no, you can't film there, it's too dangerous. So we're like, well, we can't do a show that's the most dangerous places that are not too dangerous for you to film in. That's a fucking insane idea for a TV show.
So it's like Ross Kemp does Asbos. That's it.
So we were like, so we decided to just make it like places that people don't tend to go to or have negative perceptions of or haven't even thought of as a place. So in the first series, we went to Haiti, Ethiopia, Albania, and where was the other place? Mongolia, I think. And then, we've been to Mongolia. We've also been to Colombia, Bosnia, Zimbabwe. Oh, that was the other one. And also we did Christmas episodes in the Sahara and in the Arctic, right? So we've been to all sorts of places. And each of those shows, we have a co-host who's from the area who shows me around and explains to me and helps me to shatter any preconceptions I might have about the country. So Misadventures from My Sofa, basically, when we do these shows, there's loads of stuff that we do that never makes the cut, that because it's too mad or it doesn't, we just run out of space or whatever. And there's lots of behind the scenes stuff that we capture, we film it, and it's not quite, it doesn't quite fit in with the show or whatever. So it just doesn't make it, do you know what I mean? So Misadventures from My Sofa is basically me catching up with all of my co-hosts again and talking through the process of making the show, and also showing some stuff that we didn't show in the original show. So it's going to be kind of a too hot for TV version of Misadventures.
TV.
Some of the co-hosts I've kept in touch with, and some of them I haven't really spoken to since we did the show. So I've got no idea what they thought of the show, if they thought I was respectful, if they're annoyed that I haven't kept in touch with them. So, you know, who knows how it's going to go down.
That would be great if we just had a whole episode where people are like, you know what? Romesh, fuck's sake, you know what? I tried to call the guy after the show and he didn't call me back. You know what? He doesn't fucking care. And then you're like, yeah, I don't care. Sorry.
Do you know the mad? The one was, Yona, who was my co-host in Albania. She just couldn't understand that I was a comedian or a presenter. And it just couldn't, because she was a TV presenter over there. And just, she couldn't, because all of their comedy is like slapstick and whack, 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 and, yeah, you know, all that kind of shit. So they didn't, I mean, that's probably very disrespectful to Albanian comedy. But the point I'm trying to make is...
It's all right, clipped it. It's onto it already, mate.
she was like, you're so serious. Yeah. I don't understand, like, how can you be a comedian? And like, you don't seem to be happy about anything and blah, blah, blah. And so the whole time, she just kept on saying to the production team, is he really? She couldn't fucking believe that I was doing any kind of presenting or comedy in the UK. So I'm very excited about chatting to her again, because I think she might have thought she was a victim of some sort of prank. You know, I don't think she thought this is ever going to be a BBC show. Yeah.
It'd be good to see, because there's nothing I love more than seeing comedy going over someone's head because of cultural difference. I don't know. Because it's like, who feels more embarrassed? Because if you understand someone's trying to tell a joke, but you're like, yeah, I don't quite get that, or the person telling the joke or whatever, and then they try and crack one back, and both of you are just like,
oh mate, it was so bad.
Yeah, let's just move on, shall we?
It was so bad, because I did this, the Albanian version of This Morning, because that's what Yona's kind of like the Holly Willoughby of Albania. So when we did the show, people in the gallery were messaging her going, is there something wrong with him? Like, why is he? He just seems to be so serious. He's not really giving you a lot, is he? Like, they were really freaking out about it. And so then, for the second half of the show, I just went super fucking extra on it. Like, so high energy. Just humiliating me, so.
Fuck it. You got to do it, mate. You got to do it. All right. Well, I look forward to checking that out as well, man. Quick one before we get out of here, though. Liverpool supporter?
No. Jesus, no.
Who do you support? Who do you support?
Arsenal.
Oh, good man, good man. I got my research. Liverpool for some reason. Oh, good. I'm really glad to hear
that,
mate.
Do me a favour. Find out whoever's spreading that rumour and have them assassinated. Because
fuck that. Yeah, man. You know what? I don't want to turn this into a football pod, but fucking hell, Liverpool supporters. I'm kind of happy that the season's fucked.
Well,
because right now they've got no bragging rights. Mate.
I know. The thing is, if it was Arsenal, I'd be devastated. Liverpool fans are possibly the worst set of fans that this could happen to. Do you know what I mean? Because they've been waiting for this for such a long time. They are so vocal, and they're also quite aggressive as well. I did a show, not aggressive, passionate is the best way. I did a show called Football's Funniest Moments, and I talked about, you know, when Gerrard said we do not let this slip, and then he slipped.
Yeah.
And I sort of did a thing where I just sort of said it's quite just sort of how funny it is. I don't think I've ever had as many death threats on social media as when that show went out, man. I mean, people were pissed. Do you know what I mean?
Liverpool till they die, literally.
Yes. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So what I'm going to say to you now is, if the season gets cancelled and the league doesn't get presented to Liverpool, they have my greatest sympathy.
I hear that.
You know,
I was at a wedding and my mate was like, met my missus 6 years ago. And we knew that we'd be the ones for each other 6 months into our relationship. And just like Liverpool, being a Liverpool supporter, six is a very important number for me. We're like, it's your fucking wedding, bro. Your wedding speech. And you're putting in Liverpool title wins. Yeah. Shut. The only person I know that got booed at his own wedding speech, and he was the groom. Crazy. What are you up to for the rest of your day, man? What are you getting up to?
Not a lot, really. I I've got a couple of bits to do for my podcast, Hip Hop Saved My Life, and then that's it, really. I've got a bit of a chilled out day. Ranganation is kind of Monday to Thursday, and then Fridays I kind of have a bit of a chilled one.
I hear that. My bad. I didn't even mention the podcast.
Well, don't worry about it.
Prolific Hip Hop Saved My Life, mate. What's cracking with that at the moment? It's still churning it out, still sounding good.
We just sort of carried it. I'll be honest with you, it's not, you know, when you invited me onto this podcast, it illustrated to me that you have a level of professionalism and slickness to this that is...
Are you taking a piss? All right, no, I'm about to get rinsed. No, all right, cheers.
No, mate, I'm being genuine. It's so far above what we do on Hip Hop. Hip Hop Saved My Life is a fucking shambles of a show. And we just sort of talk about hip hop randomly, whereas this actually looks like it's had some work put into it. So I'm actually genuinely commending you. This is actually a proper podcast, whereas what we do fart out some ideas about what we think about Tribe Called Quest and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's kind of one of those things where I've got no real aspirations for it. Do you know what I mean? We just sort of, it's kind of like we do it for a bit of a laugh more than anything else.
I mean, it's really pure, though. I mean, you say that and Ramesh says that, but I mean, recently, and I don't want to start picking out favourite episodes because it kind of shits on everyone else, but one that stood out to me because they're a fellow hip-hop connoisseur, you had Jagger Skills on, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That was your 100th episode and you had him on, and I think he's somebody who, in terms of knowledge of hip-hop, it's amazing because I've interviewed him in the past and every time I see there's another interview, I just want to go and listen to it, man. But isn't he a great guy to talk to with regards to knowledge?
Well, look, Jag Skills is, he's somebody that, like, I've always thought is an absolute master of his craft, you know, in terms of DJing. And he applies that to every single thing he does, you know. And he has a background in hip-hop journalism and he has a real passion for hip-hop. And so when you talk to him, you know, you'll be able to tell, I was just kind of giddy with the stories he was telling about interviewing Biggie and stuff like that and his experiences of DJing and his experiences of production. And one of the things that he's doing that's so amazing is he's doing this podcast. He's doing his own podcast where every episode is a year in the history of hip hop mixed. And he does this thing where he takes tunes and he breaks them down to their initial sample and he'll play the original tune. And then he'll gradually add the elements of it to get you to the hip hop tune. It's amazing. And he is like, you know, like when you chat to somebody and you go, you are so good at what you do. I find it offensive that you're not a billionaire or that you're not a world famous megastar. And Jaguar Skills is one of those people. I just think his talent is so immense. And also his work ethic is insane as well. To put that level of effort into doing that and put it out as a podcast. He's just doing it for the love of the game. Do you know what I mean? It's amazing.
I think that's what makes some of his content so good is that you can just tell that he's poured love into it. Like even when he was doing the mini mixes for Radio 1, they were a fucking grind at the time as well. Like technology's advanced now, so it's a bit easier for him to do that. But he was pulling together, you know, like you said, he would break down tunes into elements, not in the way he's doing it in these latest mixes, but you could kind of see where those came from. And without having that pure passion combined with knowledge and the fact that he is woven into the fabric of UK hip hop culture, he's part of it now. You can't be doing what he's doing for so long without being part of it and touching the people that he's touched. So it's amazing, man. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, he did a mix for my tour show. So I asked him to do it and he put something together and it was like, it had the level of effort and precision in it that you would expect from a commercially released album. Do you know what I mean? It was like, and he just did it for me, like to play out as people walk into the venue. Do you know what I mean? But he wasn't going to half-ass that. He just doesn't half-ass anything. Nah. Do you know what I mean? He's an amazing guy.
Nah. Doesn't fuck around. And I mean, that's what we try and do with this podcast here as well. I mean, the fact that we're people that aren't white, middle class, trying to talk about technology. Yeah, we've got to be a little bit more professional than the others. I'll tell you that for free, mate. I'll tell you that. Walked into console releases. And I thought this console's for young kids. It's full of my uncles in here from my mum's side. What's going on? I appreciate hearing that from you, man. And like, the crazy thing about talking to you, Ramesh, we've been talking for over an hour, so I will let you go soon. But, like, you churn out so much fucking content. Like, sometimes I feel like, how the fuck do you get this all done? So I've got to ask you, how the fuck do you continue to be able to put out stuff that you're acting in? You're doing live shows when we're not on lockdown. You're traveling the world. You know, you're doing Ranga Nation. And yes, I know these things are not all done at the same time, but your work ethic is crazy, man. And your output, can you just give us a bit of insight into how you maintain that?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, the truth is I'm a very lazy person. And so I'm lucky that I do comedy because I really love what I do. And so the truth is it doesn't feel like work. Do you know what I mean? I do these shows and do bits and pieces and do live stand-up and things. And I never really dread doing those things. I always look forward to doing them. And so that means that my work ethic, it doesn't really feel like a work ethic. What it feels like is I'm just doing another thing I really love doing. Do you know what I mean? End up only ever really choosing to do stuff that I think will be fun or that I could bring something to. So that's kind of what drives me. The only thing I would say is, like, I do think that if I ever, you know, the one thing that I try not to do is I try not to do something that I couldn't give 100% to. Do you know what I mean? So if ever I think I would try always to avoid committing to something where I couldn't be 100% in it the whole time I'm doing it. Like, I'd hate to be doing even, you know, like, you were kind enough to ask me to come on this podcast. I wouldn't want this podcast to be one of 10 things that I'm doing this morning, and so I'm talking to you but not being fully engaged in the conversations. I think that's the only rule that I have, is that, you know, I'm happy to do loads, but I think you have to make sure that you're sort of in it, as you're completely committed to that thing while you're doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Does that mean you were fully committed to that game of basketball one-on-one that you played?
Mate, that was me. That was me at fucking 100%. I wish I could tell you that I was thinking about something else, but I wasn't. I was in the zone. That was me in the zone, mate.
That was you on fire. Wow. That was your Liam Neeson taken moment.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, on that note, we're about to wrap the show now. But Romesh, where do you want us to go to look for you, man? Where should we go?
I guess if you just go to romeshranganathan.com and then
Posh.
You can follow me on all the social media shit and whatever. Please don't feel any pressure to do that. I'm quite happy for you to never engage. It's, you know,
100% pressure to do that and engage as well. 100%. We're at How to Kill an Hour on all social medias. That's How to Kill an Hour. And I'm Marcus Bronzy, MarcusBronzy. Thank you for killing some time with us. There's plenty of ways for killing time out there. So in the meantime, in between time, that sounded so old school. In the meantime, in between time, stay blessed.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.